Welcome to Forbidden Truth. I'm Andrew. Today I'll be speaking with Indiana double murderer Frederick Michael Bear. If you go back to May 2022, you can find my full interview with Bear. Frederick Bear is convicted of the brutal murders of 26-year-old Corey Clark and her 4-year-old daughter, Jenna, which occurred on February 25th, 2004, after Bear had left work to commit the murders. Bear attempted to rape Corey before killing her and then slit in the throat of her 4-year-old daughter. On this episode, I speak with Bear about his Princess Diana obsession and a scuffle that he got into recently with a serial killer in there, and how he deals with being one of the most hated men in Indiana, having had so many attempts on his life. Here's my interview with Frederick Michael Bear.
Prepaid call from
Michael Bear.
An inmate at the Indiana Department of Corrections, Miami Correctional Facility.
There's a documentary about, I don't know if it was death row inmates or just prisoners in general, McDonald, I want to say his name was, and you were one of the inmates in the documentary, and a lot of people have asked about this Princess Diana shrine, and a lot of people have wanted me to ask you about that and what that was about, and, you know, if you still have it now. But let's start off with, you know, what brought you to want to have a shrine of Princess Diana, of all people, in your prison cell?
Being that it's me, it was a condition of my past and everything. I seen Princess Diana when she first got married to Prince Charles, and that's when I fell in love with her. And I've always been an avid, faithfully dedicated follower of Princess Diana and the royal family. And it's just that anything that ever happened with the royal family, I've always been in tune with and paid attention to. But with Princess Diana, it was just something with her. I've always loved Princess Diana, and I just figured, well, you know, why not? She's always been a lifelong famous icon of mine, and it's just something that I wanted to have on my wall. And so I put her pictures. I had several books that I got, and I tore out my favorite pictures and put them on her wall. I made the frames out of toilet paper and cardboard and glue, and I put them up on my wall. And it was just something that I admired, along with my cat, Lucky. And it's just something that gave me a peace of mind and a happiness and a joy that I always looked to. So I just wanted to idolize her. And it got to be a little bit much, and then with my faith, I started feeling convicted. Should have any kind of idolization before my Lord and my God, okay? And so later, in years followed, I finally just, you know, put things in this proper perspective and put proper place. Do the best of my ability and put him first, you know, and I stopped idolizing her and my cat and other things. So, but I still hold her dear in my heart. I still love Princess Diana, and I always had a thing that when I do die, if it would be possible, I'd like to be cremated, half my ashes to be put in the ocean, and the other half of my ashes put into the moat of water that surrounds Lady Diana, where she's in her final resting place. There, I think it's in Kensington Palace, I believe it is. But, you know, kind of weird, stupid, but, you know, it's just something that I've always been in love with Princess Diana. I always have. For what she represents, she's royalty, she's elegant, she's rich, she's sophisticated, she's smart, she's caring, she's loving, she's kind. She's all that a guy could ever want or hope or desire to have in a babe, you know? But yet she's down to earth, and she's approachable, and she's human. And she just represents so many facets of humanity, of being just a good person with loving, kind consideration and care and concern for just a common person. She didn't look at people with a stereotyped, stigmatized, worldly label like so predominant for so many other people in the world. People are so busy looking down their noses, so, well, I'm royalty, I'm rich, or I'm really important, Why can't Hobnob or associate or talker be in your company because you're a commoner or you're a peasant or you have AIDS or something? She broke down the stereotypes of being judgmental and so aristocratically egotistical, self-righteous in so many respects. And that's why the royal family doesn't really like her so well. But, you know, she was just a common everyday person. Because she was just elegant, sophisticated, and so kind and considerate and caring for so many reasons, for so many people, irregardless of their status or position or lack thereof. I don't know. It's just, that's a kind of a woman that appeals to a lot of men, you know.
I got to ask you, I know that there's been a lot of crazy things said over the years. What do you think happened to her? I mean, I know officially she was in a car accident, but do you have any theories?
Yeah. Well, my theory is that she wasn't taken serious in her pleas and cries for help from her immediate family and all her immediate friends and immediate family there in the royal family. They really didn't want to, you know, heed her cries and give her the proper help that she needed. And yet, you know, they wanted to remain their level of sophistication and arrogance and loyalty. And they felt that if they, you know, do anything like that, they would bend and break their integrity, which is wrong. So my theory is that the media is the main ones that hounded her to death. And like Prince William and Prince Andrew, or Harry, excuse me, Prince William and Prince Harry, they is totally correct. The media hounded their mom to death. They harassed her. They didn't give her no peace, no mind. But as far as a royal family murder conspiracy, I don't think not. I think not. I don't think that the Queen and her affiliations are that cold and callous. I think the media was the ones that hounded her to death just to get a picture of her, to find a meal ticket, feeding off her, and just to get a promotion and have a better life, to get that money shot of her so they can, you know, get the top dollars and the top money. And that was the main drive of a lot of people, which the Bible speaks of. The love of money is the root of all sorts of evil. Those reaching out for that love will stab themselves over with many things. And I think that's what a lot of paparazzi is their sole goal-driven purpose, is the love of money and to be recognized. And they stabbed the world level with many things because it hounded Princess Diana to death. That's my theory.
You've told me a couple times now about an altercation you had with a serial killer there in Indiana by the name of William Clyde Gibson. Did you know anything about him prior to having that scuffle with him? Did you know about his crimes or anything he's said to have done?
Just by the conversations that he and I shared and talked with, that how he had done certain crimes in his past, and that there's other crimes that's still yet discovered and held unaccountable attached to him. But I had no prior knowledge of him prior to death row, before our altercation. No, he was swayed by other people's opinions about me and stuff, but, you know, that's where we led to our controversy towards one another. But
what led up to it? Like, do you know what was being said about one another that led up to the altercation?
Yeah, everybody didn't like me. A lot of people didn't like me because of the fact of what I've said and done in my past, you know, and that led me to be in prison, which is understandable to a point. But apparently there's, you know, a hierarchy of ego and pride and arrogance with some people, and they want to look down on me, step and squash on me to elevate themselves up to be well thought of and liked. And that such being the case with couple of inmates that you've probably seen also,
So did you guys actually get in like a fist fight, or was it just like words were said?
It was a fist fight. It was the cell doors was coming open back and forth, and there was a lot of dissension between the other inmates and I. Long history of ugliness, prison politics, if you could say it that way, between certain other inmates. They looked down upon me because of my past, and so there's a lot of problems with my mail and so much other stuff, and so the doors come open and stuff, and we've, you know, been talking about a lot of smack back and forth, and he and I was the last ones out on the range, and we got in a fight. I was wrong. I put my hands on him, but, you know, not to justify my behavior, I was negligent. I was wrong. I went to him to pursue the altercation, and I put my hands upon him, and, you know, that I was wrong. So,
did any of you end up in, like, the infirmary or anything?
Huh?
Did either of you end up in the infirmary?
No. We just had a couple bumps with bruises and black eye and, you know, hurt pride.
Was there anything said afterwards, like, I'm going to kill you or not, I'm going to kill you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they set out to, well, Gibson, I let it go. I tried about a week or two later. I tried to go back to him and say, hey, you know, I apologize. I should have put my hands on you. I didn't mean to take it as far as I did. I was wrong. I tried to make amends with him, and he said, I don't care. I don't want nothing to do with you. I'm going to kill you. And I do then. So, and they set out purpose to destroy me, and they pretty much, you know, in a lot of respects have, in ways that I can't prove, but, you know, by pretty much turning my complete support system away from me, you know, turning a lot of my friends that I've had over the years, thwarting that friendship and that support system that I've had with them, you know, so, but I don't have no ill will. I still feel and believe in my heart that the death penalty should be abolished, and not only in Indiana, but period, through the United States of America and throughout the, you know, other places, because it's a dark, barbaric act of brutality, of murder for murder, and eye for an eye, which leaves everybody blind and stumbling over one another because of past issues that cannot be changed. And the death penalty of being enforced does not make anything in anyone's lives better. So I'm solid against the death penalty. You know, that's the way I feel about it. Even now, I know that they still have ill will towards me. I have no ill will towards them other than the fact that they're still chomping at the bit to destroy my name, character, credibility, and support system in a lot of other ways. But I still feel that the death penalty should be abolished. It's dark, it's barbaric, it's brutal, it's ugly, and again, there's nothing good that comes from that.
Right, and but I know that a lot of people. I know that a lot of, they say a lot of, you know, predators or child predators or even people that commit crimes against children, whether it be a homicide or a sex abuse or this or that, have a hard time in there. And has it been pretty hard for you, even if you've been in PC or general population for that matter? Like, have you had many attempts on your life or been having to be more cautious?
Yeah. When I got off death row at the Indiana State Prison, I accepted my plea bargain of life, double life without parole, August 1st, 2019. Then August 19th, 2019, I left death row at the Indiana State Prison. Went through RDC, Receptional Diagnostic Center, stayed there for 37 days. People knew where I came from and what was going on. Everything was fine, you know, didn't have no altercations. Then I came to Miami Correctional Facility in Bunker Hill, Indiana, and that's where I'm at now. And I've been here since September 24th, 2019. And I've been in several dorms. When I was in L dorm, after I got kicked out of the PLUS program, I went to L dorm. There was armed robbery. I had two individuals, strong armed robbery. They had knives. I came back to breakfast and they robbed me at knife point. And so then the officer who was on duty, she protective custody just to get out of that dorm, and I went down to another dorm on the other side of the complex, and I was there for a while, and then I caught COVID symptoms, and then I went to another dorm that was under quarantine. I was through the whole COVID thing, and, you know, there was some people that was trying to make me pay because of my past, you know, and to extort me and step on me, and I didn't, and together in K dorm, and then there was an attempt on my life because of the disagreement between me and another inmate. He was all whacked out on dope and everything, and he had a misunderstanding, and pretty much they tried to kill me, but it didn't happen, by the grace of God.
So what did they try to, like, stab you and you took it away from them and hit them, or guards rushed, or how did you stop it?
Well, I avoided being stabbed. I was trying to keep my door shut after they got the staff member to open the door.
How did they get them to open it?
They just went up there and told the staff, said, hey, I need you to open this cell. And they was out on sanitation, so they had a lot of influence with staff. And so they went up there and told the staff member, open this door, and they opened the door, not knowing, not aware what was going on between the inmates and I. And so when the door opened up, I tried to shut it, and I had inmate on one side and inmate on the other side of the door with knives. And somehow or another, I, by the grace of God himself, I squeezed through them both, went out into the day room, ran around the table, while they had knives with a couple others coming up on me, and I went around the table and back in my room and slammed the door shut to where I was able to barricade the door long enough to, you know, get them to calm down or whatever, get the guard to isolate my door. And so I avoided that. Well, later on, the guy ended up getting into an altercation with somebody else. He got in trouble and taken out. So, but later we made amends because I knew some other inmate who knew that inmate up to Michigan City Prison, and they was buddies with this guy that tried to attack me, and he squashed it off for me pretty much. And you know, that was it. You know.
Is that the only time anybody's ever tried to, like, kill you to the point where they actually got within a couple feet away from you?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, that was the only altercation. The one in K-Orm where they robbed me, and they both of them had knives, but they didn't do anything. Then that altercation when I was, or excuse me, in Eldorm, that's when they got robbed at knife point by those two guys. Then the altercation in K-Orm, that was it. You know, I've been in a couple squabbles here and there, but, you know, it's nothing major or whatever. You know, everything was resolved, so.
Do you ever sit there during, the day or the nighttime and just sit there and think, you know, when's the next one coming? You know, am I ready for it? Do you ever think about that, or do you just roll with the punches as they come?
I pretty much roll with the punches when they come, because if I sit there and dwell on it, I start to have anxiety or panic attacks, or I let it spin in my head to where I get all caught up in my head and my emotions and my feelings and be super hypervigilant and scared, you know. The dorm that I'm in now, it's the honor dorm because of the fact that I've stayed out of trouble, I've stayed conduct free, I've got a job over in the garment industries where I'm sewing and working and stuff. So I try and stay out of trouble so I don't lose my job and get kicked out of my dorm. I'm hoping to get minimum wage because, you know, that's how I make my state pay. And so that way I can sustain myself and take care of myself and all that. But I don't, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I mean, if it's somebody from my past, okay, if it's somebody in my past, you know, they've got a bloodthirst, hate, revenge, get back, then I guess that's on them. They have to live with it longer than I do. Don't get me wrong, Andrew. I'm not a badass. I'm not a John Wayne type mentality where I think I can whoop the world. But I'm not a coward and a punk to where I'm just going to let somebody just come up and beat the crap out of me or put trying to avoid the trouble and avoid the problems. That's, you know, again, I'm trying to live my life by the standards of what the Bible got, it says, and the guidelines of what it says, where as much as it depends upon you, live peaceably amongst all men. Now, I don't claim to be a very good human being or a very good person of my past or a very good spiritual person, period. But I do try and live my life by certain standards of morals to be a good person apart from my past. I can't undo my past, but we all have one. But I'm not God, and I'm not in the place in the position to look down on someone else and judge them for their past and think that I'm better than them or they're better than me. And so I, you know, try my best to avoid problems, avoid the conflict, avoid the negativity, so I don't have the headache and the stress and the problems like so many others do. I mean, that's the only thing I can do. And like the Bible says, as much as it depends upon you, live peaceably amongst all men. And that's what I try and do. Am I perfect and righteous in all this? No, I'm not. You know, I still look at pretty good-looking women on TV. I'm still a grown man. I still have wants and needs and happies and sads, all this. I just don't walk around and try and lord my truth and knowledge and spirituality on nobody or think that I'm something more than what I am. I'm just a common everyday person like everybody else, you know, just a screwed up with a past like everybody else does, that I can't undo my past no more than William Gibson or John Stevenson or Michael Dean Overstreet or Jeff or anybody. Nobody can undo their past. And, you know, I don't think that it's a badge of honor to do the things that we've done to cause so much pain and problems like we have. Some people like that, some people don't. And I'm one of the kind that I don't think my past is anything to be bragging or boasting about. It's shameful and it's ugly to do the things that I've done and to cause the pain and the problems that I have to so many lives. But for people in my past to take a vindictive revenge and hate, picking even with me, make me suffer because of my past, their life isn't going to get better. And you know, that's a root of bitterness being planted, springing up and defiling so many lives, thinking that for something that I've said and done in my past, they're going to get even with me by making me pay and suffer and make me broken. Their lives are not going to get better, but it's going to become worse.
Do you feel like it gets worse for you day by day as time goes on, as you, you know, get older and, you know, look back?
I know what my past is, and I know that I've got a stigmatized label upon my jacket because of my past. Nobody likes a person that's done the things that I've done. Some people, you know, I get to know about my past. Like in this dorm, a lot of people know about my past. I'm not proud of it. I'm not bragging and boasting about it, but I don't hide it, you know. I use it as a platform to show what the Lord's grace has done in my life and what He's done helped me out to be a better person. Do I think about it? Yeah, I do. And it concerns me about my future, but I'm not going to let my past dictate my future. I'm just going to live right now, one day at a time, in the present, doing the best that I can to be a better human being apart from my past.
If you had to tell anybody, like, say you had like a, say, 16 or 17 year old kid coming straight to prison, and I'm not even speaking death row, general population, what would you tell them, like, the three worst things that is in store for them in prison, you know, to that they need to either prep for or need to be watching out for?
A youngster coming in here, and I have done this before, being an older convict and one is a veteran convict, I have mentored youngsters coming in here. And I've told them, you know, just try not to get debt. You know, don't go in debt unless you have the ways and the means to pay it. Don't walk around like you're Billy Badass, like you can whip the world, or like you're better than anybody. And just be a good person. You know, that's the best way you can do that. And the only way that we can actually be a good person without you? Will you change me? Will you help me? And that's what I try and share with people, not only youngsters, but older dudes too, or somebody struggling. And we all struggle. That's the thing, Andrew. I can't tell you, I can't emphasize and tell you enough how badly so many people in here are struggling, mentally, emotionally, psychologically, and socially. Human beings need somebody to talk to and hang out with and just to be company and have friends and to be a strength and a support and encourage one another. And that's what we're supposed to do and be as human beings towards one another instead of looking down at each other. I don't care if you're John Stevenson, Michael Dean Overstreet, or Ben Ritchie, or whoever you are, or William Gibson. I don't care if you're Queen Elizabeth, or some royal dignitary or public official, or high-ranking public dignitary in society. You're human before anything in this world that you attach yourself to find your identity. And people forget this. People forget because of the place and a platform of position once we become human, you know? We rise up to a certain arrogance or level of ego and pride. And we forget where we come from, and we forget that we're all human with the same wants and needs and desires and happies and sads. And it's sad and sick and pathetic that the world's condition is so cold and calloused and becomes so waxed over with cold and callousness and lack of love towards one another. Because the world and money and things of the world shows a respecter of persons, and where God is no respecter of persons. Love is the predominant force of what we should have and hold and consider and regard one another, irregardless of the past. Love is the only thing that helps people understand and become better maybe I'm too much with that. I don't know, but that's just how I think and feel.
That was my interview with Frederick Michael Barrett. Thank you for listening.